Okay, we're beginning here 11 lines down on the top of Mem Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss that which it concluded with regards to the Mishnah yesterday. The Mishnah distinguishes between the Etrog and the Lulav. In the Mishnah, one is permitted to buy the Lulav from the Amaretz, but not permitted to buy the Etrog, because the Etrog is subject to Kedushat Shvi'it, and the Lulav is not. For that reason, you can buy the Lulav, but you need to get the Etrog as a gift. Or if he refuses to give you the Etrog as a gift, you can pay extra. You can be mavliya, the price of the Etrog in the Lulav, overpay for the Lulav, and then get the Etrog as a gift. The question was, why is it that the Etrog has Kedushat Shvi'it and not the Lulav? The Gemara answer, there's a difference between the Lulav and the Etrog. And that is the time frame or the threshold at which they determine what Kedushah they have, whether they belong to the 6th year or the 7th year, for Masrot, for Shvi'it. And we saw that with regards to the Etrog, it was determined Batar L'Kita, that was at least according to the view of the Rabbeinu Be'usha, and our Mishnah is following that position, that Etrog goes after the time that it's picked. That's because the Etrog has similarities or features that are similar to a vegetable. Now we saw yesterday, either because it's Gadel HaKol HaMayim, it requires watering constantly and not just for a portion of the time, it doesn't suffice with the rainwater, or because of the fact that the determination of when something is considered to be in that year has to do when it ripens. And ripening for a vegetable is determined by when it's picked. For fruits, generally, as Tosafot said, when they blossom or budded, that same year that that happened would also be the year that it ripened. But the Etrog is an exception to that because it continues to grow from year to year. And therefore, like the vegetable, it's only considered to be ripened or reached its point of ripened state once it's been picked. And therefore, the likita, the picking of the item, determines which year it belongs to. And therefore, if you pick the Etrog in the 7th year, it's going to have a din of Shemitah. Had you picked it in the 6th year, it would have a din of the 6th year and not Shemitah. And that's what they generally do here in Eretz Yisrael when it comes to the upcoming year, which is a Shemitah year. They pick all the Etrogim before Rosh Hashanah in order to ensure, at least according to the Shita, that it's Batar L'Kita and the Shita of Batar Chanata, that the Etrogim in this year will not have Kedushat Shvi'it. With regards to Lulav, the determining factor, the Gemara said, was Batar Chanata. It's like any other fruit tree, any other tree that produces fruit. There it goes after Batar Chanata, which is the blossoming or the budding of the fruit. And that clearly happened for the lulav during the 6th year and not in the 7th year. And therefore it doesn't matter when you cut the lulav, whether it was in the 6th year or the 7th year, it's determined to be a 6th year fruit or a 6th year item. And for that reason, it does not have Kedushat Shvi'it. And that's the distinction between the Etrog, which does have Kedushat Shvi'it, and the lulav, which does not have Kedushat Shvi'it. And the same would be true vice versa in the subsequent year. In the subsequent year, meaning the year after the Shemitah, when it comes to Sukkot, if one was to get a lulav in that case, the lulav would definitely have Kedushat Shvi'it, if we determine that lulav has Kedushat Shvi'it, because the Chanata took place during the Shemitah year. And because of that, it would have Kedushat Shvi'it. With regards to the Etrog, then it would be again subject to this machloket. If it goes Batar L'Kita after when it's picked, try to pick it after Rosh Hashanah of the Shemitah year, so that it would not have Kedushat Shvi'it, and that's what they do on Motzei Shvi'it. They try to pick them after Rosh Hashanah, even though we're choshesh for the fact that it is Batar Chanata, that it goes after the budding of the fruit, and therefore it would also have Kedushat Shvi'it when it is in the 8th year, because it had its budding or blossoming during the 7th year, and that's why in next year's Sukkot, the year after the Shemitah, you have to buy either from Otzar Beit Din, or they have all sorts of mechanisms for allowing one to purchase an Etrog, even though it might be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. But the Gemara now says about what we just concluded prior to this, the time of the lulav bar shishit ha-nichnas l'shvi'itu. The reason that the lulav doesn't have Kedushat Shvi'it is because it's a 6th year item going into the 7th year. I mean, it went after the Batar Chanata. Ha! Had it been the Shvi'it, had it been a 7th year item, like we just discussed, in the subsequent year, meaning on Motzei Shvi'it, Kadosh, the lulav would have Kedushat Shvi'it. Amai! Why should that be the case? Eitzim ba'al mahu. It is simply a piece of wood. It is an inedible item. Why should it have Kedushat Shvi'it? Beitzim, ein v'hem mishum Kedushat Shvi'it. And wood or inedible items don't have Kedushat Shvi'it. This is based on the Havamin of the Gemara here, which is that the Pasuk says in Parshat Behar with regards to the Shemitah, Vayita Shabbat Aretz Lachem lo achla, lecha ul'avdecha v'lamatecha usircha utoshavcha garim mimach. So because it says lo achla, the Gemara assumes that it only has to do with edible items, meaning that Kedushat Shvi'it only devolves upon edible items, and only edible items are subject to the rules of Kedushat Shvi'it. And a lulav is not an edible item, so then why should it be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it? It's no different than wood that is used for burning in a fire. And if that's not subject to Kedushat Shvi'it, why is it that the lulav is subject to Kedushat Shvi'it? So Tanya, and the Gemara proves this, alei kanim, when it comes to the leaves of reeds, balei gufanim, or the leaves of the vines, shigavavan l'chova p'nei asadeh, he gathered them together into a single location on the field, meaning that he was trying to store them. He brought them in large quantities. And as Rashi explains over here, shigavan l'chova means l'shom achbeh, that he collected them for the purpose of storing them. Tosafot over here points out, maybe you have to say dafka, that's the case where he pings them in large quantities. Do we have this uncertainty as to what the purpose of the item is? But if he collects them in small quantities, we'd automatically assume it was done for feed and not for wood, or for burning, or yesh lefaresh, or chadamilta nakat. Or maybe that's just the normal way that they're collected, and it's irrelevant how you collect them, because the same determination can be made no matter when you pick them or how many of them that you pick. It's a question of subjectively what you're going to use the item for. Now, over here, the bright has a distinction. Likta na'achila, if he collected them for the purpose of eating them, not for human consumption, but for animal consumption, yesh ben mishum kedushat shvi'it, then they would be subject to kedushat shvi'it, because again, they're an edible item, and therefore lo achila, and they'd be subject to kedushat shvi'it. Likta na'etzim, on the other hand, if he collected them for wood, ein ben mishum kedushat shvi'it, in that instance, there would not be any kedushat shvi'it. So you see here from this braita, which proves our assumption, that when it comes to something that is edible, it's subject to kedushat shvi'it. When it comes to something that is inedible, that's used for wood, it doesn't have a din of kedushat shvi'it. And therefore our question is, why by the lulav is it subject to kedushat shvi'it at all? So as the braita points out, these items have a certain amount of uncertainty to them. That is because they have equal utility with regards to being animal feed as they do to being firewood or used for burning. Because of that, the person who's picking it has a subjective ability to determine what is the utility of this item. Implicitly, it indicates the fact that if you picked an item that had a determined purpose ahead of time, like wood, where the wood would be used for burning and it's not really used for feed, then it wouldn't matter what you thought, because the determining factor would be what it's normally used for. And since it's normal usage of something that's not edible, then it wouldn't be subject to kedushat shvi'it. And that's our question with regards to the lulav. Doesn't matter what you're thinking about, but the lulav itself is not an edible item. Nobody picks it to be an edible item, and even if you do, but dato it's all kol adam, or because the majority or primary usage is for using for etzim, or really, as we're going to see in a second, as a broom to sweep up with, then there shouldn't be subject to kedushat shvi'it. So the Gemara says, no. Shiny hotom damakra lachem lo'ochla. The pasuk has two indic qualifiers as to what happens to the perot of shvi'it. It says vaytashvat arts lachem and then lo'ochla. Lachem would be l'chol tzarchechem. Means whatever you need to use it for. Meaning it would be open to you to do whatever you want with these items. It's given to you to utilize as you please. But then there's another qualifier, which is lo'ochla, which only means for eating. So how do I balance between one lachem, which seems to indicate you can do whatever you want with it, and the ochla, which seems to qualify and narrow the scope of what you're allowed to do with perot shvi'it, which is the ochla, to eat them? That's what the Gemara explains now, lachem dumia de ochla. The lachem is qualified by the ochla, which is that you are able to get benefit from the perot shvi'it, or any item that's subject to kedushat shvi'it, the same way that it works with achila. Mi shanato ubi'uro shaveh. When it comes to eating, the hana and the elimination of the item happen simultaneously. Yatsu etzim, that is not true by wood, shanatam achar bi'uran, that the benefit from them comes after they've been wiped out or eliminated. So as Rashi explains over here, this has two ramifications. The first of which is that items that meet these standards will be subject to kedushat shvi'it. The second one is, if it is subject to kedushat shvi'it, then it has to be utilized in this manner. So there is some sort of duality here, which is that only items that meet this requirement are subject to kedushat shvi'it, but if they do meet the requirement, then they have to be utilized in the way that matches the way the qualification indicates to make them into perot shvi'it or kedushat shvi'it. That qualification is bi'uran and hanatan shaveh, that the elimination of the item, the consumption of the item, takes place simultaneously with the hana, the benefit that comes to the individual. And as the Rabbeinu Chananu explains over here, the derech ha'machal l'os ul'va'er ha'machal, when you eat food, you chew on it, and that eliminates, consumes the food that's there, bili sato. As you're chewing it, mitorat ochel, it ruins it or changes it from food into digestible items. V'kevin shemagia b'chanichav, Once it reaches your teeth, your molars, where you're chewing it, nenechiko minamachal. Your palate gets the joy or the pleasure of that food being there, bilisiato. As you're chewing it, v'nit ba'er oto apri, and then that item is eliminated, consumed. Nimseit, you see from that, hanato ve'et bi'uro ba'in ke'achad. His pleasure and the elimination, consumption of the item are simultaneous. The zeo, and that's the meaning of hanato bi'uro shavin. So that is true when it comes to items that are fruits, vegetables, things that you can consume. The Gemara here says that that also has application to lulav. As Rashi points out, the main purpose of a lulav is to be used as a broom. If you use it as a broom, as you sweep with the broom, it wears it down. So the benefit that you're getting is utilizing it as a broom. The wear and tear on it happens at simultaneously with the benefit you're getting from using it as a broom. And therefore, lulav meets that standard. If it meets that standard or qualification, as we said before, that means it's subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. If it's subject to Kedushat Shvi'it, then you have to utilize it in such a manner. You can only utilize it in a way that where bi'uro and hanato is shaveh. And that's why the lulav, if it was koneit in the Shvi'it, would be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. That's not true of Eitzim. There are a number of ways to formulate this now. Rashi points out that the reason that Eitzim are different is because Hanatan and Biuram are not Shaveh, and that's because, according to Rashi, the main purpose of burning wood is to create coals. And then the coals are used for heating things up, for cooking with. And therefore, the main Hana'ah is from the coals that are only created after you've already consumed or burnt the Eitzim. And that's why there's now a differential in time between the consumption of the item and the benefit that you get from the item. That's the way Rashi explains it. The Rabbeinu Chananel has a slightly more nuanced explanation, which is, Klamar, ena pat nefet, veina tavshil mitbashelet, elachar srifat ha'itzim. So he explains that it is not that you're using it for coals, but using it for cooking. And in the cooking process, by the time the wood is consumed, that's when the cooking process takes place. The cooking process is after the wood is already consumed, because the heat produced takes time for it to cook, and the cooking is happening in delay, or after the consumption of the Eitzim themselves. And that's why there is a differential in time between the consumption and the Hana that is experienced. Others, like the Ritva, suggest that maybe the difference is that the benefit that you get from using the heat is to cook items, which you will get benefit from when you eat them later on. And therefore, the eating of the item is clearly a differential in time, the Hana'a, separated or away from the consumption of the wood or the fire that you're creating. And therefore, there is a differential between the bi'uran, the consumption of the item, and hanatam, the benefit that you're going to get from it. So for Rashi here, the main issue is how you utilize it. And since the main purpose of burning these woods is for coal, and therefore the creation of the coal is delayed or after the time of the consumption of the wood, that's what makes it that ein bi'uran v'hanatan shaveh. As for the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Ritva, the determining factor is when you actually get the hana. When do you get the benefit from it? Is that, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, it's when you cook it, when it reaches the point of bishul and when you've cooked it, or for the Ritva, when you've actually eaten the item? And those are separated. That hana is separated from the consumption of the wood or the fire that actually produces the bishul or the food that is then eaten afterwards. So the hana, in effect and in reality, is separated from the consumption of the item. So Mara says, Vayika Eitzim Dimashchan, Tanatanu Biran Shaveh. Wait a minute, don't we have wood? The Mishcha wood, which it's not clear what it is. Sounds like that it's a wood that has a lot of fuel to it, whether it's oil, whether it's a pine, or that it burns very easily and quickly. And Rashi says over here, it's used the ha'ir, it's used for light. And therefore, when you burn it, that's when you get the light. So at that point, it's hatan ubi'uran shafeh. The Rabbeinu Chananel, on the other hand, says that mashchan comes from the word lehit chameim, to warm yourself up, to heat oneself up within. And he proves that from Avishag HaShunamit by David HaMelech, that the targum, the translation of lehit chameim is mishchan, is to warm up. And therefore, over here too, this is a wood that's used for heating, not for cooking. So by cooking, there's a delay, because that's when the hana happens, is the cooking, and then the eitzim already consumed. But in a case where you want to get heat directly from the wood, you want to get the benefit of being heated by the fire that's there. That's an immediate benefit that's associated with the burning or consumption of the wood simultaneously. So we do have instances where eitzim do have anatan ubiran shaveh. So amarova, stam eitzim lasaka heinomdim, that the default status of wood is that they are begun to use for burning hasaka, According to Rashi, it means to make them into coals. According to the Rabbeinu Chananel, it means for cooking. Or for the Ravitva, it means for cooking and then eating, consuming the food that was cooked in them afterwards. And since that's their default status, doesn't matter that there are other utilities or other times that you use wood for this. Now, and therefore, the Balei Tosafot and Baba Kamo and Rashi over here seem to indicate that the Etzim de Mashkan are for Hasaka as well. Their main purpose, or their default purpose, is for Hasaka, and therefore that will determine their status, even though there are small amounts of people, or there are times when you don't use it for that purpose, that's not going to matter, because their default, or their normal usage, is for this reason. And so Tosafot and Baba Kamo suggest that it doesn't matter what you use the wood for, since that's their default status, that's their majority of utility, that grants them the status of not being subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. And even if you use them for heating or for light, it doesn't matter. Another hand, Rashi over here has Mushani Hotam Etzim Shel Hesek Bahasaka. Those items that are normally used for burning are for Hasaka, and therefore they are determined to be default, not subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. The implications from that are that Rashi would suggest that if they weren't for Hesek, if they weren't for that purpose, that maybe Etzim would not then be relieved of the Kedushat Shvi'it. And they actually would have Kedushat Shvi'it according to that diuk in Rashi. So it's not clear here whether the Gemara is making a blanket statement that all wood in general has that default status and doesn't matter what you use it for, because since that's the majority or primary purpose of wood, it's not subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. Or is Rashi saying that generally wood that is used for Hesek is for Hasaka, and therefore if you use that type of wood for something else, it would not be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. On the other hand, if there are woods that are primarily used, or maybe even in a significant amount of situations, it is used for something aside from Hasaka, for cooking, then maybe it would be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. And there might be a distinction here between the Diuk of Rashi and what Tosafot says in Baba Kamo. Now the Gemara says, Ve'itzim la'saka tenayihi, that this issue of whether Etzim la'saka is actually subject to Achmeloch Loket Tanayim. And over here, there's a major machloket as to the girsa. The girsa that we have in the Gemara follows the girsa of Rashi, who took out the girsa that he heard from his Rebbeim. The girsa that he had from his Rebbeim is Stam Etzim Lahasaka Ninhu Tnahi. This concept of Stam Etzim Lahasaka, that is subject to a machloket Tanaim, to which Rashi says, I can't make heads or tails of it. I've tried since my youth to figure out how to fit that girsa into the Gemara, and it doesn't work, and therefore I think it's an incorrect girsa. And I think the girsa should be the way that I'm indicating here, which is Etzim and Dahasaka Tanaihi. The question of whether Etzim that are used for burning are subject to Kedushat Shvi'it is a Machloket Tanaim. Everybody agrees that the default status of Etzim is for burning. The only question is, does that make it exempt from Kedushat Shvi'it or not? And that's the subject of Machloket Tanaim. Tosafot over here points out that Rashi in the Gemara in Baba Kamo actually explains the girsa according to the way that his Rebbeim had the girsa. That's Stam Etzim La'saka. And that is, he says, V'zeh Lashon T'nai'i, Ika Man De'itlai Stam Etzim La'saka Nitnu, that all wood has the default status of being used for cooking, for making into coals. V'lo Chayla Shvi'it Afilo Etzim De'mashkan. And therefore, even if it's a wood that is utilized sometimes for lighting, sometimes for heating, that doesn't matter because the default status of wood is such that it is La'saka, and therefore it's not subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. That some believe that Etzim Mashkan are left out of that rubric of Stam Etzim La'saka because they have a different utility. That's the Machloket Tanaim, that the Rabbonon hold, and we're going to see in a second, that Stam Perot La'achila Nitnu, that the generic utility of Perot is for eating, and therefore they're subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. And therefore, even if you pick them for other purposes, it's not going to change anything. They're still going to be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it, and you can't utilize them for these other purposes. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi believes, and we're going to see in a second, that the default status of Perot is for eating, but it also is open to the possibility that you could have another utility for it. And therefore, since it has that possibility, like the Braita that we brought before, that says Alei Gvanim and Alei Kanim are subject to the will of the individual picks them, so too by Perot. And therefore, if you have in mind to eat them, they would be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. If you have in mind to use something else with them, then they would not be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. And that's the way Rashi explains it in Baba Kama. And therefore, according to the Chachamim, just like by Eitzim, we say whatever the default status of Eitzim is, that determines for all wood what their status is, and they're not subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. So too by Perot, the Stam utilization of them is for eating, and therefore that determines what the Kedushat Shvi'it is for them. And that means that they will always be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it, and you can't alter what they're used for. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says that it's all determined by the individual who picks them. Just like by the Alei Kanim and Egfanim we saw before, that they're subject to the will of the individual who picks them, so too it will be by Eitzim. There'll be a difference about why you picked the wood. And then same too over here by Perot. It'll depend on what you picked it for. If you picked it for Yachila, I'll be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. If you don't pick it for Achila, you pick it for laundering or other purposes, it would not be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. The problem with that explanation is it does not necessarily fit well into the remainder of the Gemara here, which explains the sheet of Rabbi Yossi in a second. And from there, it doesn't sound like Rabbi Yossi thinks that if you use the fruits or the achila for these alternative items, that they're not subject to Shvi'it. He seems to think that they are have Kedushat Shvi'it, and they can still be used for those items, because that's not a violation of their Kedushat Shvi'it. And that's maybe what Rashi's saying over here, even though the explanation might work, and it doesn't work well here, according to the way that the Gemara continues, within the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, which is the following, the Tanya. Emosrim Perot Shvi'it, you can't give over Perot Shvi'it, lo demishra, for soaking flax, lo dekvusa, or for using for laundering. So Rashi over here explains that you have wine, and that wine that's subject to Kedushat Shvi'it, you can't utilize it for soaking flax in it, and you can't use it for soaking clothing in it in order to launder it. Rabbi Yossi Omer Mosrim. Rabbi Yossi says you can use it for that reason. So again, the way that we just explained it in Tosfot, the difference between them is whether you can determine what the purpose of what you picked is. If you determine that it was going to use for laundering, Rabbi Yossi says you can do that, and it's not subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. The Chachamim, on the other hand, say that the default status of wine is to be used as a drink, and therefore you can't subjectively change what its status is in its subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. And once it's subject to Kedushat Shvi'it, you can't use it for alternate items like laundering or soaking flax. On the other hand, the Gemara here seems to indicate that the machloket between them is about what is considered to be a proper usage of items that are subject to Kedushat Shvi'it, which is my time at the Tanakama. Damar Kra, the pasuk says lachla, and lachla means that you're allowed to eat the items. V'lo l'mishra, v'lo l'kvusa. It can be used for eating, not for soaking flax, not for laundering. My time of the Rabbi Yossi. So then what does Rabbi Yossi think otherwise? It says, Amakra lachem. It says lachem. This is what we noted before. There's this tension in the pasuk. And he says, lachem, l'chol tzarchechem. Whatever you want to use it for, that's your option. V'afilu l'mishra u'l'kvusa. Even if you want to soak flax in it, even if you want to launder with it. Because Tanakama aktiv lachem. Wait, the Tanakama has the word lachem before lachlo, so what does he do with that? How lachem dumia de lachlo? Like the way we learned before, that the limud is that the lachem is modified or qualified by the ochla, and which is mishanato biro shaveh. So only things where the consumption and the benefit are simultaneous, like achila, will have be proper usage or proper utility of perot of kedushat shvi'it. Yatzu mishra v'kusa shanata machar bi'uran. That's not true when it comes to soaking flax or when it comes to laundering. There the benefit is after you already consume them. So Rashi claims that it has to do with the fact that when you launder or you soak the flax, the benefit is going to come later on when you make it into clothing and you wear the clothing. So that sounds similar to what the Ritva said before with regards to cooking or baking, that the eating of the food later on is the hana'ah, and that's a much more of a delay. Whereas Dvalia Tosfos will point out, he doesn't know why Rashi needs to wait so long for it to be considered hana'ah. If you consider the hana'ah, the soaking of the flax, or the hana'ah is the laundering of the item, even before you wear it, it still takes time for that to happen. The wine is consumed earlier on, and then the laundering happens either when you squeeze it out later on, or after a couple of days, it takes out all the dirt or stains that are in the item. Same with the soaking of the flax. The flax only is soft enough that you can peel it, and you can take the fibrous material out after a couple of days, but the wine itself is being ruined or destroyed immediately, and therefore there's a delay in the hana'ah from the consumption of the item. And therefore, according to them, it doesn't meet the requirements of what you're allowed to use items that are subject to Kedushat Shvi'it for. Rabbi Yossi, haktiv lochla. Okay, Rabbi Yossi says, lachem, you can do whatever you want with it. What about the lochla? How mi bayle lochla v'lo lugma? That teaches you that you can use it for eating, but you may not use it for medicinal purposes. Lugma is either a salve or some sort of bandage that is put on the individual, and that you can use it. Kedetanya, lachla, v'lo lugma. We have a braita that says that. You can eat the poirot of shvi'it, you can't use them for medical purposes. Ata omer lachla, v'lo lugma. That is the bright that says now. How do you know that it's coming to exclude the bandage or the salve, and it's not coming to exclude laundering? Shomer lachem, because you have the word lachem. Hare lekvusa amur. So that says it includes broader hana than achila. So that includes kvusa. Hamani mikayim lachla. So then what does achla come to exclude? Lachla v'lo mlugla. So it comes to teach you that eating is the only thing you can do, but you can't use it for a salve, and you can't use it for a bandage, you can't use it for medicinal purposes. So medicinal purposes are excluded, but laundering is fine. Lachem says laundering is fine. Lachla says that salves and medicinal utility is not allowed. So the obvious question is, how do you know which one to include and say is okay, and how do you know which one is to exclude and say is no good? So he answers, merabeh ani et hakvusa, I include laundering, sheshaveh b'chol adam, because it's something that is equally beneficial to everybody. Everybody needs to launder their clothing, everybody needs clean clothing, and therefore it's a hana hasheveh lakol. Umotzeh ani et hamlugma, but with regards to medicinal usage, shein hasheveh l'chol adam, it's not beneficial to everyone, it's only people who are sick is it beneficial for. And since it's uniquely or narrowly beneficial to individuals, that's something you can't do with Perot Shvit. So now we have a difference between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim as to what you're allowed to do with Perot Shvit. According to the Chachamim, the determining factor is Achila. And that means something where Biuran and Hanatam is Shaveh. Never Lachem, the ability to utilize it any way you want, is qualified by Lo Achla. And that tells you if you can simulate the way that the Hana is generated for Achila, which is Biuran Hanatam Shaveh, anything subject to Kedushat Shvit, you can utilize in that manner. The other hand, Rabbi Yossi says that's not the determining factor. The determining factor is it just got to be hana, hasheveh l'chol adam. As long as everyone would benefit from it in a similar fashion, meaning that's broadly beneficial to people, then that's a permitted usage of something subject to Kedushat Shvit. Laundering and soaking of flax is something that is beneficial to anyone who would engage in that. It would be beneficial to anyone. And therefore, it is a permitted use of those items that are subject to Kedushat Shvit. That's included by Lachem. The Ochla comes and says, well, it's got to be something that's broad utility, not something that has a narrow scope of utility or a narrow scope of individuals who benefit from it. And therefore, it says that if it's used for a salve or a bandage, it's not good because that's only beneficial for people who are sick. And therefore, it's not a proper usage of items that are subject to Kedushat Shvit. And that's because Achila is something that everybody needs and everybody does. And so other items that are similar to Achila will be permitted uses of Kedushat Shvit, whereas something that is narrow in its scope will not be permitted. Now going back to Rashi's Girsa in the Gemara, that's what the Gemara is saying here. Stam etzim lasaka is a machloket tanaim. According to the Rabbanon, you're right. The default status of etzim is lasaka. Therefore, they do not meet the criteria of hanatan ubiuran shaveh. That means that they're not subject to Kedushat Shvit. Since they're not subject to Kedushat Shvit, they have no limitations on how they can be used. That's number one. Number two is that if you have something with Kedushat Shvit, you can't utilize it in a manner that doesn't meet that qualification of Biuran and Hanatan Shaveh. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Yossi, you have a broader swath of utility that you can utilize items that are subject to Kedushat Shvit for. And that means that anything that is Shaveh L'chol Adam. But that means, just like he says, Kedushat Shvit can be utilized for this broader purpose, he also believes that those items are also subject to Kedushat Shvit. That means that for him, even etzim that are biuran and hanatam are not shaveh doesn't matter because it's a not shaveh l'chol adam. And so according to him, the wood would be subject to Kedushat Shvit. And that's what the Gemara is saying. The fact that stam etzim la'saka is a tour from Kedushat Shvit is true to the Rabbanon, but it's not true according to Rabbi Yossi. And that's the way Rashi explains it here in our Gemara. And that's similar way that the Rabbeinu Chananel explains it, and he says, "V'stam etzim lasaka omdim ve'im mutarim b'shvit ele mishum hanatan achar biuran." And the reason that they're mutar and shvit is because their hana and biur happen not simultaneously. That is tanaihi. That is subject to a machloket tanaim. That reasoning or that logic is subject to a machloket tanaim. And only according to the Chachamim would that be true. According to Rabbi Yossi, they would be subject to kedushat shvit. Now, Rabbeinu Chananel does limit this expanded definition that Rabbi Yossi has in permitting items that are subject to Kedushat Shvit to be used for kvisa and for mishra. He says it's limited to gom perot shimlabmin v'kobsimben. It has to be fruits that you normally would use for this purpose. Kegon, haborit, ukoyotzeben, like lye and other materials that are generally used for this purpose. So according to the Rabbeinu Hananel, Rabbi Yossi is not going to say anything that has Kedushat Shvi'it is permitted to be used for Kvisa. It still has to be something where it is a normal usage of the item. It has to be Anah Shavu L'Chol Adam, but it still has to be something that people will use for that purpose. And so therefore it is allowed to be used and still subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. On the other hand, you could have argued, and it seems from the way that Rashi explains the Gemara, it's not limited to those items that are used for Kvisa. Any item that is subject to Kedushat Shvi'it, that is used in a manner that is Shavu L'Chol Adam, even though that may not be its primary purpose, it still would be permitted. And therefore, it's not just about the items that are normally used for Kvisa. It is even about anything that's subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. The Aruch Haner points out that it's a little strange that the Gemara needs a specific limud to teach you you're not allowed to use something subject to Kedushat Shvi'it for laundering or soaking the flax. We have a din with regards to items that are subject to Kedushat Shvi'it that you're not allowed to destroy them. You're not allowed to ruin them. And over here, that's what's going to happen when you utilize them for laundering or for soaking the flax. So he gives two answers. One answer is that it's a case where the item was already ruined enough that it wasn't edible anymore. Since it wasn't edible, the question is, now do you have to just leave it and let it go to waste? Or can you utilize it for these items, and that's what you need the miut for? Or it might be that laundering and soaking are items that are considered to be chaye nefesh, as explained in the Gemara in Nidarim. That's the sheet there of Rabbi Yossi, that those items are considered to be chaye nefesh, just like eating. And therefore, actually, it explains the difference in Rabbi Yossi's position from the Chachamim. He thinks it is a permitted use of the Perot Shvi'it because he thinks it's no different than eating. It's Chaye Nefesh. Therefore, it's not a Hefseid of Perot Shvi'it. Whereas the Chachamim believe that laundering is not considered to be Chaye Nefesh, and therefore it's a destruction or a ruining of the Kedushat Shvi'it or the Perot Shvi'it. And that might explain the difference in their opinion here, that it's not only about which Hana'ah is permitted, but it is also whether this type of Hana'ah is considered to be a destructive Hana'ah, or a constructive hana'ah. And according to Rabbi Yossi, it might be constructive because laundering is on par with eating and drinking. Whereas for the Chachamim, laundering is a different category. It's a destructive item, even though we need it or it's necessary, but it's not something that we're permitted to use Perot Shvi'it for. And so that's why according to the Chachamim, you need a specific miud here to tell you that you can't use Perot Shvi'it for these purposes. Who's the author of this braita? Lachla v'lolum lugma. You can eat it, not use it for a salve or a bandage. You can eat it for eating, but not for sprinkling wine on the floor, either because it makes it aromatic or because it mats down the dust. And you can eat it, but not make it into an emetic drink that causes the person to disgorge all the food that they've eaten. An emetic of sort that causes the person to throw up. Who is the author of this braita that suggests that achila excludes all of these items? Because seemingly these items are narrow in scope for their benefit for certain individuals. Only someone who is sick will need a melugma. Only somebody who is very particular, as Rashi says, will want to sprinkle wine instead of water to mat down their house. And only someone who is overeating or gorging on food will have the necessity for drinking an emetic in order to disgorge that which they have eaten. So come on, who's that like? Rabbi Yossi. That's like Rabbi Yossi. According to the Chachamim, these aren't the only items that are excluded. Even laundering and soaking are excluded. It's not just that they have these additional items, but they have a whole larger category of items that are excluded. And that's something that Ein Biram VeHanatan Shaveh. But for Rabbi Yossi, the whole exclusion is Ein Shaveh L'Chol Adam. And here you just brought examples of Ein Shaveh L'Chol Adam, so that shows you that the braita here must be authored by Rabbi Yossi. Right now the Gemara continues with the machlok between Rabbi Lazar and his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan. Amar Rabbi Lazar, Ein Shvi'it mitchalalet el derech mekach. Rabbi Lazar says that Shvi'it can only have its Kedusha transferred if it's done in a transactional manner. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, ben derech mekach, ben derech chilul. Doesn't matter if you do it transactionally, or if you do it in a way that you just want to simply redeem or transfer the Kedusha, both of those are effective at transferring the Kedusha. Now, some of this is a little misleading, because as we're going to see in the Gemara itself, that the Perot Shvi'it, or something that's subject to Kedushat Shvi'it, never loses that Kedushat Shvi'it. Even if you transact with it, even if you try to redeem it, according to Rabbi Lazar, and according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Kedusha remains on the original item. It is then also transferred to whatever you did, meaning that if there was a transaction, Then the Kedushat Shvit remains on the payroll, and the monies that were used to purchase them also now are subject to Kedushat Shvit. There is an exchange of Kedusha, but it's a Kedusha that passes, but does not eliminate it from the original object. So Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan are not necessarily arguing about whether you can have the Kedusha move from the items that are subject to Kedushat Shvit onto another item. That's not going to happen, because the original item is always going to remain with Kedushat Shvit. The question is the new item subject to Kedushat Shvit? According to Rabbi Elazar, only if it was done transactionally will the Kedusha transfer. If it's not done transactionally, then it doesn't work, meaning that the Kedusha doesn't leave the original payroll, and the monies that you tried to transfer onto also are not subject to Kedusha, because that is not a mechanism which allows for the transference of Kedusha. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan believes no matter how you transfer the Kedusha will remain with the original payroll, and the monies that it was transferred onto, whether it's transactionally or through a redemption process, will also be subject to Kedusha. After that, the new item that has gained Kedusha, as we'll see in the Gemara, it can transfer Kedusha. That Kedusha can be removed from it and then placed on other items, and it keeps going down the line. Beginning of tomorrow's daf, we'll actually get to a explanation of their machloket that basically takes all of that into consideration. But right now, the Gemara is just assuming that their machloket is about whether you can transfer Kedusha from the payroll shvit onto another item, and what is the mechanism for doing that. According to Rabbi Lazar, it's only transactional. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's transactional or redemption. My time with the Rabbi Lazar, what's his reasoning? Dichtiv, because it says in Parshat Pahar, B'shnat ha-yovel azot. So, as Rashi points out, the Shemitah and the Yovel are synonymous with regards to the restrictions on the working the land, as well as with regards to Kedushat ha-peirot. And therefore, whatever said about Yovel is true of Shemitah, and vice versa. So over here, when it speaks about the Yovel, it finishes off the Parsha as Shnat HaYovelzot Teshuvu Ish El Achuzato. Then it begins the next Parsha, which is Chim Timkru Memkar LaMitecha Kono Miyad HaMitecha Tono Ish Et Achiv. So over there, it's speaking about transactions, that you have to transact in an honest and fair manner. And so what's the juxtaposition of Yovel to transactions? And that's what Rabbi Elazar explains. So that's saying to you that the way that the Kedushat HaYovel or the Kedushat HaShvi'it can be transferred is only through Memkar, is only through transactions, only through a purchase of the item. Rabbi Yochanan, my taima. So what does Rabbi Yochanan do with that? He has that juxtaposition. So he says, Dichtiv, Ki Yovohi Kodesh, because the pasuk before it says, Ki Yovohi Kodesh Tiyalachem Min Asadeh Tochlu Et Vu'ata. Over there it says, Kodesh Tiyah, Ma Kodesh, just like when it comes to Kodesh, Ben Derech Mekach, Ben Derech Hilul, when it comes to things that are Kodesh Lashem, things that are Hekdesh, their Kedusha can be transferred either through a transaction, or their Hekdesh can be transferred through Hilul, through redemption. And just like by Kodesh it works, Av Shvi'it, Ben Derech Mekach, Ben Derech Hilul, it can be done in either fashion. Rabbi Yochanan and I, Timkru Mimkar, my Obitlei, but he has to deal with the juxtaposition. So what does he do with that? Mibaylei, the Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, he needs it for this memra of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. At the time you have a Braita. The Braita is much more expansive. Rashi quotes it on Chumash, that there is a series of juxtapositions in Parshat Bahar, and the explanation of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina is, this person did something wrong, and because he did something wrong, he's then subject to the subsequent items that are mentioned in the Parsha, each one of them getting worse and worse. The first one here is dealing with a transaction. The next thing is dealing with a person who has to sell his field. Then a person has to sell his house. Then a person has to borrow money. A person has to borrow money with interest. Then a person who has to sell himself as a slave. Then a person has to sell himself as a slave, not only to a Jew, but to a non-Jew. Not even not to a non-Jew, even to Avodah Zarah. And so there is a decline or deterioration that's taking place in the Parsha. And what the Parsha begins with is Shvi'it, Shemitah, and Yovel. And since Shemitah and Yovel are the beginning, there must be some violation of Shemitah and Yovel that is triggering this. And that's what it said here on Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. Boreh kamakasha avaka shel Shvi'it. Look how pernicious, how difficult the dust of Shvi'it is. As Rashi points out over here, avak means something that's a derivative isur. So we have it in avak ribit. When there is interest that's charged, there's problems of interest midoraita. And there's what's called avak ribit, which is interest that's midrabanan. It doesn't qualify to be restricted min haTorah, but the Rabbanan still restricted it because is a derivative. It's similar or acts or simulates the way that Ribid works, midoraita. We have avak lashon hara, something that's not inherently lashon hara, but it is a derivative of lashon hara. It either can cause lashon hara, or it itself is a type of conversation or speech that is similar enough to lashon hara that it's classified as lashon hara. And similar here, you have avak shviit, which is the primary issue of shviit is not working the land, not doing the normal processes to the land. That's not plowing, seeding, harvesting the land during the shemitah year. There is a secondary isur, which is what you do with the perot shviit, the kedushat shviit. That's the objects, the items that grew during that year. What is they din with them? And there's a restriction against transacting in them and doing business with them. The truth is that that might also be triggered by the fact that the juxtaposition, or the first juxtaposition, is chaytim krumem karla mitecha, which is talking about a transaction. So it might be that the chayt is midah keneged midah, the fact that you did something wrong with transactions. That's what's going to be the punishment. The first punishment is going to deal with transactions. And then the subsequent punishments are all dealing with transactions. Just a question, what's the object of the transaction? Maybe that's why it's speaking about avkashvo shvit, something that's a derivative isur of shvit. Adam nosev notem beperot shvit. Person who transacts, who benefits, as we saw Tosfot yesterday, profits from perot shvit, which is supposed to be hefker, and for everybody's benefit, for everybody's usage, and instead you are keeping them and profiting from them. Sof mocheret metal talav et kelav. He's going to be forced to sell his possessions and his non-real property. Shneimer meshnata yovel azot tashuva ish lachuzato v'samichlei v'chintim kru mem karla mitecha v'chulei. The Braita continues and says, if he doesn't learn his lesson from that, then he's going to have to sell his real property. He's going to have to sell his fields. If he doesn't learn his lesson from that, he's going to have to sell his house and so on and so forth. It keeps going. The deterioration continues because this person doesn't learn the lesson. But it all starts from what's seemingly an innocuous violation, which is transacting in perot shvi'it, and that's what the juxtaposition comes to teach you. Rabbi Elazar, haikrod Rabbi Yochanan, my avidlei. What does Rabbi Elazar do with the pasuk that Rabbi Yochanan uses his proof, which is yovelhi kodesh tiyeh lachem? What does he do with that kodesh? Miboyle lektanya, he needs it for this brayta. Ki yovelhi kodesh, ma kodesh tofeset damav, av shvi'it tofeset damav. Just like Kodesh, the Kedusha, transfers from the object that is Kadosh to the monies, to the item that you are transferring it to, so too with Shvi'it, it also passes on the Kedusha. Now, there is still a difference between them, which is that by Kodesh or Hekdesh, the Kedusha leaves the object that is Kodesh and moves on to the object that you transferred it to. On the other hand, by Shvi'it, you will be successful at transferring the Kedusha, but not removing it from the original item. It's more like Tmura, when you try to exchange one animal for another, there who tmurato ye kodesh. The original animal remains kodesh, and the one you tried to exchange it for remains kodesh. That's more of the tenor of that which takes place with regards to shvi'it, which is when you transfer kedusha, you're successful at transferring the kedusha to the new item, but not at removing it from the item that you are transferring it from. And the Gemara says, we have braitot that support each of their positions. Tanya kavate de Rabbi Elazar, Tanya kavate de Rabbi Yochanan, Tanya kavate de Rabbi Elazar, shvi'it tofeset et tamea. Shvi'it has impact on the item that you're transferring the Kedusha to. Shnemar, ki ovohi, kodesh tiyalachem. Ma kodesh tofeset damav, basur. Just like kodesh is transferred to the monies that you're transferring the Kedusha to and remains asur. Av shvi'it, tofeset damav, basura. So too, shvi'it, if you transfer onto another item, that will be successful at creating Kedusha on the new item. So first of all, that's the limud that Rabbi Elazar has from that pasuk, and this braita does the same thing. Now it continues to make the distinction that we noted before, which is ima kodesh tofes damav biyotzeh l'chulin, just like kodesh leaves the object that is kadosh now and transfers that kedusha onto the new item, af shviit tofes damav biyotzeh l'chulin. Maybe perot shviit or item subject to kedusha shviit would have the same effect, which is that when the kedusha transfers from them onto the monies or to the other object, that the kedusha leaves the original object and makes them chulin. Tama lomar, yivohi kodesh tiyeh. Tiyeh means b'havyata tehei. It remains in its status. That status remains intact. And therefore, the original item still remains kadosh. Ha, Kate said, I'll give you an example. Lakach beperot shviit basar. The person takes perot shvit and purchases meat with it. Elu ve'elu mitbarim b'shvit. They're both subject to kedushat shvit, the perot and the basar and the meat now, and they both are now subject to bi'ur, and when zman ha'bi'ur comes, they both have to be taken care of properly. Lakach be'basar dagim. If you then bought with that meat fish, yatza basar v'nichnasu dagim. then the meat is no longer subject to kedushat shvi'it. It's now been transferred over to the fish. Lakach midagim yayin. If you purchase with these fish wine, then yatsu dagim v'nichnas yayin. Then the fish are no longer subject to kedushat shvi'it, but the wine is. Lakach v'yayin shemen. If you purchase with that wine oil, then yatsa yayin. The yayin is no longer subject to kedushat shvi'it. V'nichnas shemen, and the shemen, the oil is. Ha ketzad. So what's the summary? What is happening over here? Acharon nichnas b'shvi'it. You can transfer the kedusha all along the line for an object that was made kadosh by kedusha, by transference from peirot shvi'it or kedushat shvi'it. Upri atzma asur. But the original item still remains with kedushat shvi'it. So in our example over here, the original peirot shvi'it will still have or retain their kedushat shvi'it. And the last item, which is the shemen, will also be subject to kedushat shvi'it. All the interim items will have their kedusha transferred off of them, and therefore they will be chulin. So the first and last item will be subject to kedushat shvi'it. Everything in between will not be subject to kedushat shvi'it. And that braita is like Rabbi Lazar, because it says, miktani lakach, lakach. All the situations are speaking about a purchase. It uses the verb to purchase in all these situations. And therefore, they darshan the pasuk the way that Rabbi Lazar does. And they also use the verb lakach, which is what Rabbi Lazar says. The only way to transfer kedushat shvi'it is through purchasing, through a transaction. Alma derech mekach in derech hilulo. That shows you that transactionally it works, but if you do it through a redemption, through a transference without a transaction, it would not work. Tanya Gavate de Rabbi Yochanan. We have a bright that supports Rabbi Yochanan's contention that you could transfer it either way. Echad shvi'it ve'echad ma'aser sheni mitchalin al behema chayav of. You can transfer the kedusha of ma'aser sheni, which are items that a tithe taken off of them, and then have to be taken up to Yerushalayim to eat it in their kedusha. You can transfer that kedusha off the ma'aser sheni onto another object. And similarly, with regards to shvi'it, you can transfer that kedusha from the peirot shvi'it onto another item. And that is even echad ma'aser sheni mitchalin al behema chayav v'of. You can do it on any animal, domesticated wild animal or bird, ben chayin, whether they're alive, or ben shkutin, or whether they've already been shechted, divrei Rabbi Meir, who permits you to transfer this kedusha onto any of these items. V'chamim omrim al shkutin mitchalin. You could transfer that kedusha onto shechted items, but al chayin emit chalalin. But on live animals, we don't let you do this. Gzeira shema yigadol mehem adarim. Because we're worried about you raising flocks and flocks of these items. So if the animal is alive, there's a great incentive for this individual to breed the animal. If they breed the animal, then they'll have more and more of them. So you'll have something that is subject to kedushat shvi'it, or something that's subject to kedushat ma'aser sheni, and here you're breeding it into a large quantities are large items. So Rashi says the problem is that peirot shvi'it are not given to you to profit with, but rather they have to be consumed in the year of the Shemitah, and then bivuar, then have their biur done at the end of the year when it's not available to the wild animals. And that's not going to be the case if you keep it around. And by ma'aser sheni, you're supposed to give the ma'aser sheni within the year that it is tithe. And if you don't do that, after the first 3-year mini cycle of the Shemitah cycle, you have to eliminate all the ma'aser in your possession. You're not going to do that if you're raising flocks and flocks of these animals. And therefore the Chachamim say, we don't want you transferring this kedusha to live animals, because they're afraid that you're going to start utilizing those live animals to produce more and more animals. And either there's going to be a takala because you misuse or misappropriate the ma'aser sheni or the kedusha shvi'it because you don't remember that it has this kedusha because you keep them around for so long, or because it's a misuse of what the purpose of ma'aser sheni or the kedushat shvi'it is, like we just explained in Rashi. And therefore the Chachamim say you can't transfer this kedusha onto live animals. Now how we know that this braita is supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's position, according to Rashi, it's because it uses the word mitchalalin, mashma derech hilul, according to Rashi, and not necessarily b'mekach u'memkar, not lakach, like we saw in the previous braita. The problem with that is that even Rabbi Lazar before used the word mitchalalet when he was talking about mekach u'memkar. And therefore, it's not clear that mitchalelet is mutually exclusive with mekach u'memkar. So, it's possible that the difference is that over there, he specifically said mitchalelet, and he was speaking about mekach u'memkar. But when it's used independently, without any other indication that's speaking about transactions, mitchalel means pidyon, means redemption, and that's the proof for Rabbi Yochanan. Or it could be the fact that you're comparing shvi to ma'aser sheni. And by ma'aser sheni, it's clear that pidyon works, that redemption works, because that's the way that when the quantity or volume of whatever you have tithe is too much to take up to Yerushalayim, the Torah permits you to redeem that item onto money, and then take the monies up to Yerushalayim and spend them in Yerushalayim on foods in Yerushalayim for Maaser Sheni. So the fact that Shvi'it and Maaser Sheni are compared shows you that Shvi'it can be redeemed. Or it could be the fact that the Braita just says it's Stam, says it without any definition or without any qualification. And the fact that it says without any qualification is an indication that it could work anyway. And that also would be supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's contention. As Tosfos points out over here, that the whole issue of purchasing animals with the monies of Maaser Sheni is only outside of Yerushalayim. Because once you're in Yerushalayim, the monies of Maaser Sheni are supposed to be spent on items or food items, including shlamim and korbanot, to be brought inside of Yerushalayim. So the whole problem here must be that you're purchasing these items outside of Yerushalayim, and that's why it's a problem. By Shvi'it, it doesn't matter where you're purchasing it, it's going to be problematic. But with regards to Maaser Sheni, at least, Tosfos points out, this has to be outside of Yerushalayim in order for it to be problematic. And then Amar Rava says, Machloket, this Machloket between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is limited to Zecharim, to the males. Avo mine kevot, if you recall, al shchutim mitchalin, al chayinei mitchalin. When it comes to females, everybody agrees that you cannot redeem the Maaser Sheni or the Shvi'it onto these female animals. Zera shemi gadel mehem adarim. Because by the females, that's an animal you could keep around for breeding purposes because they give birth. Males are not helpful because they don't give birth to anything. They can be studs, but they're not the ones giving birth. So the question is, am I gozer the zecharim, the males, onto the females? That's the view of the Chachamim, and therefore not only can you not redeem onto females, you also cannot redeem onto males. As the mayor says, females I understand, that you can't redeem onto. But males, there's no reason to have such a gzera, and so I believe that you can, onto a live male animal, transfer the kedusha, because you're not worried about you bringing up adarim adarim, because they are males and not females. And so Rava just narrows the scope of their machloket to males rather than all live animals, because everybody agrees by a female that would be problematic. Gzeira shema yigadel mehem adarim, because maybe you're going to make them into large flocks. We're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Mem Aleph. Tomorrow we'll discuss Ravashi's explanation for this machloket between Rav Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. And as we already noted in the beginning, that explanation really accords more easily with what we know with regards to Kedushat Shvi'it, that the Perot Shvi'it retain their Kedusha, and the item they transfer onto also have Kedusha, and that Kedusha will be passed on, so the first item and the last item also will always have Kedushat Shvi'it.